Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls and Animalia, thank you for joining us on another episode of This Week in Mormons. We appreciate you taking the time to spend just a brief little speck of your day with us. Thanks for doing so. We are international this week, coming to you live from Victoria Harbor in Hong Kong.
Oh yeah, that's true. That's true. That's actually accurate.
Yeah, because Al is there. Hi, Al.
Hello, Jeff. How are you?
How it is?
It's 7:30 here. You guys have no idea the dedication that is required for Jeff and I to maintain first a friendship, second a podcast.
This is
very difficult.
It's one of our most intense time difference. When you were in New Zealand last year, we thought about recording, but then decided to bag it because it was an even more drastic time difference, and you were vacationing, so we just let it go.
Well, it was drastic, and my internet down there was much more spotty. Up here, my internet is still very slow, but we're able to maintain a connection and say hello.
Yeah, so it works out. So it's 7:30 in the morning in Hong Kong, and it's 7:30 in the evening in Washington.
Is it exactly 12 hours?
It is exactly 12 hours.
I love that I don't even think about it. I just say, I can go in the morning or at night, Jeff, figure something out. He says, okay.
Which I did this because I can't do it your evening because I'm at work. So this works out okay.
Well, ever since you got a job, you've been so unavailable.
I've definitely been less fun since returning to the world of office stuff. Yeah. I mean, it's cramping my style.
It used to be I'd call you up and we'd go on trips and do things.
I also got more vacation time back then at my old job. So that, you know, it was fun.
I've actually vacation time is funny. I've been like surprised at how many people are so sort of obsessed with vacation time, especially when like we'd be interviewing for a new job and they'd come in and they'd be like it sends such a weird message of just like, I really want this job, but I want the promise that I don't have to be at it as much as possible. Because I'd be like, all right, so like 2 weeks vacation, they're like, my minimum's three. And I'm like, but you're starting down. They're like, I need three. And it's like,
yeah, but are they starting out or are they a seasoned professional starting out?
They're seasoned pro. They're seasoned pro, but like I'm looking for somebody hungry.
Yeah,
I want them hungry and like anxious to be there, not negotiating to not be at work.
I do not think that it means someone is not hungry, but when you are a professional entrenched in your views and in your needs and what works for your lifestyle, you wish to find a job that also works for that.
Not want a job at a startup.
Well, yeah, but you're not a startup anymore, dude. It's time to get over that.
No, I'm definitely still a startup.
You're not really much of a startup. I mean, you kind of are.
I maintain. Six years does not a startup make.
You're pretty institutionalized at this point. So, and I will say this. Yes, the people who start the startup work like slaves. But how many of these tech firms do you know of that are as old as your company, Alan, and they offer things like unlimited vacation to their people? That is like
That's sort of the promise, right? Is it is unlimited. You say, hey, as long as your stuff is taken care of, I don't care where you go. And they say, whoa, but, you know, it's an old school way of thinking. But I just want to promise that it's going to be there. And I'm like, hey, if your poop ain't working, you don't go on vacation. Disneyland does not go down unless you're doing your job exceptionally well.
We need to work on the way you market your positions. Because all you have to do is say, no, it really is like unlimited vacation. Just get your job done. Like, that's what I expect of you. But I understand I understand some people saying, well, what if stuff is tough and there's still stuff to get done, but I delegate it out and I'm able to actually, you know, go away for a week, unplug.
You live in this utopia, Jeff. There's no delegating out for these positions I hire. I hire them, and it is you that needs to go and do these things.
There has to be contingencies.
And if you build a team that does it, great.
You can't.
But if not,
you can't keep hiring people using 1980s employment tactics in 2015.
180 employees and still going, Jeff. I am doing just fine.
And you are a slave master. Do you do a company survey? How is morale?
No, I don't.
I challenge you to do a company survey at the end of this year so that you can learn. And then
my survey is my Christmas party. Do you come or do you hate it?
I don't come. I'm not invited, even though I do work for you guys. I guess because I contract.
You should come this year.
I'm not like an employee per se.
We'll do it in Hong Kong. Pay for your own flight. See you there.
That sounds like the exact thing my wife would want me to do.
So, Jeff, how is your life?
It's fine since we last checked in. You know, it's just much of the same. Did some home teaching last week. We saw the Avengers on Friday. Who could ask for anything more? I don't know if you've seen it. You've probably been traveling, so you have not.
I have not seen it, no.
Well, it was very good. I enjoyed it. It was a fun time. That was great. Always love a big event movie, you know. Good audience, good crowd.
Was it worth the hype? Did it live up to it?
Well, the hype, I think, was different this time around. Because the first Avengers was a very big deal. It was the first time anyone had done something like this, get all these different characters and put them all together at once. So that novelty wasn't there. So this was more of, will it be as good as the first one? I thought it was about on par with the first one. I was satisfied with the film. Some parts didn't make any sense. Like, if you saw Iron Man 3, Tony Stark basically throws in the towel at the end of it. But the Avengers 2 starts up, and he's just there doing his thing with no explanation. I don't understand what happened there, but...
He's back.
It's not mine to understand. It was enjoyable. I'd even see it again. It was pretty good.
Well, I hope to see it with you someday.
Well, maybe someday if we see each other at some point in the near future, maybe that would happen. Other than that, it was a good weekend. We had a state conference this weekend, so I kind of spent the whole weekend at the Stake Center with all sorts of things because we had
This wasn't the broadcast.
The broadcast now is separate from state conference because
I have to ask: did you do it outside a cool stake would?
Sadly, we did not. We did it at our stake center, where they then do a closed circuit broadcast to two other buildings in our stake.
Oh, gross!
Well, our stake has 5,000 people in it, so it's kind of.
Yeah, that means you got to do it outside so that you can all get together.
It's a lot of people to handle. We should start renting out Wolf Trap. That'd be awesome. Oh my goodness! Everyone would love that. So it worked.
It worked for Liberty, Missouri.
Yeah. So state conference was it was solid. Let's see. I mean, Saturday evening session was kind of cool because they had a lot of either recent converts or people who had returned from inactivity came up there in tandem with someone from the ward council who had worked with them in one capacity or another. The theme was sort of how to strengthen our ward councils and use them to look after either straying sheep or new folks. And I thought it was pretty interesting. It was good. We had a priesthood leadership session before that, which aired very closely to just stake priesthood meeting. So I don't know if I have fully formulated feelings about that experience yet.
Wait, what was this?
You know, usually often in stakes, you'll have a priesthood leadership training kind of thing. You know, so if you're a high priest group leader, elders quorum presidency, a clerk, the high council, whatever it may be, you are invited to attend priesthood leadership training before the Saturday evening session of conference for a couple of hours, wherein, presumably, you will be trained on how to be a more effective leader. And it was pretty good. Okay. It was fine. I hadn't been to one of those in a long time. The last one I was out of town, so it was fine. Really, the highlight of Saturday is we had a wonderful new man got baptized in the afternoon. So that's why I spent the whole day at the Stake Center. And this was a delight. Wonderful baptism. Great spirit there. He's one of these... The man who got baptized is one of these men who just loves what he has learned. I mean, he's up there talking, actually saying, I know this is where the authority and the keys of God are found. And we're all of salvation. He actually went and pointed at the bishop and said, "Bishop, I know that when you give me a calling, you speak as a representative of the Lord. And that calling will come from the Lord. And that is what the Lord want me to do at this time in the ward." And he was he was so psyched. It was great. His testimony, which they usually do, customarily at baptisms, usually there are these little, short things, some cursory remarks. It was a 25-minute sermon. It was awesome. I love this guy.
And then he
serenaded us. The closing hymn was his own original song on guitar because he's formerly an evangelical musician. And so
I feel like that's the best way to lead in. Now, instead of listening to you guys mumble along with Lead Kindly Light, I'm going to do a ditty.
And it's all his original music. He's performed in church a few times. It's great. I love the enthusiasm and the spirit he has to stuff and how he makes us think outside of the box, perhaps a little bit.
I feel like he could just take any evangelical song and call it his own and nobody there would have any idea. Maybe he's just a fraud.
No, he's not a fraud. He's a wonderful guy.
No.
He's a wonderful guy. That was fun to be a part of. That was a good experience. So all in all,
that's cool, man.
That's what's been going on with me and stuff. Solid. How is your business class world and Hong Kong?
Very, very nice. I went and ate dumplings last night at a Michelin-rated restaurant. It's probably the only Michelin-rated restaurant in their book that I can actually afford. So that was very pleasant. I just had to go and find the ramen house in Hong Kong. No, it was actually really good, dude. From the sesame seed dessert buns to the... of course, I go some pot stickers and some pork and shrimp dumplings. It was delicious. And then they have this cool part of the city where, like, you just ride escalators up for, like, miles. It's kind of nuts. And so it, like, takes you up through this whole mountain shopping region. And I'm not kidding. It's probably an honest, like, mile and a half of escalators that I rode, which is the most escalators I've ever ridden in my life.
Yeah,
it was quite some distance. And it just kept going. So we did that all the way up, and then you'd be proud of me, Jeff. They have like almost a funicular. They have a tram that's on a cable that goes up the steepest incline I've ever been on in my life, funicular included.
Where'd you go? Did you go up to Peak Tower or something? Or where'd you go?
Yeah, we did. We went up to the Peak Tower, and but it just drags you up, and so I'm like you're like sitting in these benches hanging backwards. It was quite intense.
Yeah.
But very fun. I mean, I feel like whenever I travel now, I just try and tap my inner Jeff and say, what would he do?
So you're staying
Where would he go?
So you're staying on the island then, I assume.
Yeah, Hong Kong Island. That's
okay,
right.
You're on that side. If you go across the harbor, you should go to Avenue of the Stars and like see the Bruce Lee statue. That'd be exciting. It's like their version of the Little Mermaid statue in Copenhagen.
But everybody wants to touch it.
But decidedly different. Yeah, yeah, pretty much. I'm jealous, though, man.
The only other things I have left to do, well, because I went up to the deck and, like, looked around, and that was pretty sweet, but I intend to go see the Big Buddha, and then maybe go for a beach day. And then I fly home. Like, I had to cut my trip here short, and so it's a ton of flying for 4 days of Hong Kong.
Yeah, that is. That is.
But then I fly to visit you in D.C., which will be lovely.
Well, you're really coming to visit the leader of the free world, but I'm flattered.
We'll see how all that works out. They can't promise anything, but we get a lunch.
I'm jealous, man. I've never been to Hong Kong. Always wanted to go. It's a place that fascinates me.
It's kind of interesting, and I wish that I had somebody that like was really excited to tour around here, because I don't look anything up. You know I don't, and so I just go walk out. And I say, you man, what would be interesting?
You sir.
I want to. Yeah.
No, don't say. Don't say that.
Yeah, it's fun. It's fun. No, but Hong Kong. Who'd have thought? Anyway,
yeah, man. Good for
that's
you.
My life right now. It's pretty exciting.
When did you? I mean, the time difference is so weird. I don't know when. You should go check out the temple though while you're there. I mean, there is a temple in Hong Kong.
Oh yeah.
And it's I think that'd be a fascinating one to visit because it's the first like multi-use building we used for a temple. A couple like Manhattan, right? Same thing where they have the Mission Home, a stake center, all this stuff because real estate's so expensive there. They built up. I don't know exactly where it is though. But
I don't know either. I'm looking it up now. So, Hong Kong Mormon Temple.
So am I. I typed in Hong Kong Temple. That's probably Hong Kong China Temple. I think I found it. It's way on the other end, on the north end of across the bay. It looks like. I'm saying it's not in the central business district, which is understandable because it's expensive there, eh? I don't know. That'd be fun to check out.
It is.
Even if you can't do it.
It's 5.4 miles away.
That's actually not very far. I'm sure you could hop on the old MTA or whatever it's called. Be there in a jiffy.
Yeah, maybe I'll figure it out.
That could be exciting. Well, it's good. It's going to be good.
It's going to be good. Anyway, yeah.
Well, I'm jealous of you, sir. So, folks. Exciting week in Mormon news. So many things have happened.
Tens of things.
Yes. There are dozens of us. Dozens.
I think the biggest one is the online tithing.
I heartily agree.
I think that leads the pack.
Oh, undoubtedly. That's our lead story. Top story.
So the church, they've approved online donations, which means that we can now go and pay...
Well, it's rolling. But to preface this, it's rolling out. It's not available everywhere yet. Our sources, the church has said it's going on this year. I had some sources that told me they expected a national rollout in the U.S. Through by the end of June, which is pretty quick, all things considered. And this is only stateside, by the way. I don't even think this applies in Canada. So, just for the Americans. Sorry.
Well, that's not fair, though, because Canada's, or like anything international where you have any sort of, like if you're working internationally or something, this has already been available, just not
that's
in
true.
Fancy format.
But that's for Americans living abroad, not for Canadians just living in their country as Canadians.
We only recognize Americans living abroad in Canada. I don't actually recognize any native Canadians out there.
Isn't a big player in your company Canadian?
Yeah. Yeah, Dave. Yeah, he's the best.
There you go.
nicest people. Salt of the earth.
Okay. So anyway, tell us more about the online tithing, Hal.
Yeah, so you can actually pay it through your LDS account once it rolls out, once it's there, which is great. So some of the... it'll be just as though you're paying locally. You cannot pay with credit card, unfortunately. I really just want the points. Once I can start getting points through ACH transfer, the game is over, people.
Right?
The game is over. But yeah, there it is. So it'll still be received in your local ward, right? So your bishop will still get the fast offering and all the stuff like that. But this is just an easy way to do it.
And the key thing to remember here is, like Al referenced, ACH transfer, which means when you log in, you're actually going to give them like your checking account number, your routing number, all that kind of stuff. So you can't even use, say, just a debit card that's tied to a card number. Nothing like that, because that usually comes with fees. There's some kind of a servicing that goes on there. So ACH is easily the cheapest and makes the most sense. Also, as far as cards go, I'm sure it would be hilarious if the church allowed us to basically finance our tithing donations with credit cards.
How weird would that be to join, like even this, to join the church and they're like, oh, just pay your tithing online. Go connect your bank account and just pump money in. Like, I feel like that sends
pump
a
money
little...
And send it in.
That feels like it sends a little bit of a wrong message,
well,
you know?
And I've wondered about just the...
But it's very convenient for us. We want it.
It's very convenient. I thought about, like, the teaching opportunity, you know, for years down the line with my own kids or whatever. I feel like there is something to be said for... not to demonstrate publicly, like, look at me, everybody, I'm paying my tithing, but to at least see your kids, or if you're, you know, in the young men of your own.
Well, you go up and you shake the bishop's hand, and he says, thank you, brother.
Yeah, there is an example thing there, I think, and I wonder how... I wonder if we stand to lose that, how that'll affect people. You know, it's very similar in some ways in my mind.
I don't think we anticipate 12-year-olds paying their tithing online. Well, I don't think that's a thing.
No. So, of course, there'll still be that element. And I certainly hope so, because I think there's a good side of that, of sort of the still physical way of doing it, of showing, teaching the children well. It's like how, you know, I can watch General Priest of Meeting online now, which I'd like to do. But I think once I have kids, we're having a boy in many years, when he wants to go, I'll probably take him to church for the experience.
Take him to church.
By the way, speaking of that terrible song, you might have seen I posted it on our Facebook. I was literally out and about on Saturday in between sessions, and I just said, okay, Google, take me to church. Because like, you can log your location, and it'll give me directions to church. It knows where because I've saved that. Instead, all it gave me was results for that Hozier song. And that was it.
That is actually kind of funny.
That was it. I was like, this is the opposite of what I wanted. I was worried that I actually thought to myself, I wondered if that was going to happen. And it did. It did not take me to church. It took me to Vivo.
We have one other story on here titled The Confidentiality of Tithing, or Should Tithing Donations, or Tithing Donations
Should
Be
Confidential. We should preface this by saying that, yes, when you pay your tithing, the whole bishopric actually puts your slips up on a wall, and they all examine them together. And discuss people's finances.
Well, here's the deal. So there's an article over at Rational Faiths, which has some interesting stuff from time to time that's worth chatting about. And they have this whole thing idea that...
Rational Faiths actually argued with us on Twitter over conference a little bit. It was kind of funny. I think they publish worthwhile stuff. I just thought of that. That's all.
Yeah. Anyway, they have this article that sort of argues that it should all be confidential. So when you pay your tithing, no one should see it. It should go into the big box, and you get credit for it, and off you go. But the bishop, like any of your local leaders, shouldn't see it. The way that it works currently, and to Jeff's point, like The idea is that you pay your tithing, and the people that are touching it don't care. You know, they're just grateful for your tithing, and they treat it with respect, and they aren't speculating on how much money you make or anything like that, and they just say thank you. And it goes into the bank account, and off it goes. I know with my own bishop, you know, I would pay tithing, and he actually reached out to me and said, hey, you know you can do this online where it's a little bit more confidential. I think there's some concern with some of the eyes along the way. I mean, there's people can look it up if they're curious, and sometimes you get curious eyes. And his one comment is he said it'd be really cool if you could still pay your fast offering locally, but then like he actually encouraged me to go and pay my tithing through the central church thing, just so it wouldn't be weird for me being in our local ward. Now, ideally, when you pay your tithing, nothing happens, but, like, there are a myriad of people along the way that have access to go and look at that, right? Which sometimes, listen, we've all been in the mission office as one-year missionaries, and everybody's looking the other way, and you just want to see what your bishop wrote about you, right? You just want to peek at that. And so you do. You look. You got to see it. Even though they say that the bishop will, you know, those words will never be seen by the mission. Yeah, we find a way. We find a way. We're just curious. Well, the same goes with tithing. It's sort of there, yeah. And you have a bishop that can see it. Yeah, like when you go and do your settlement at the end of the year, there's actually a statement printed out, which, again, he's not looking at it saying, really, brother, only $500? You know, he's looking at it saying, you tell me, are you a full tithe payer or not?
Well,
say, yeah,
and to build upon that, in your case, if you pay directly to Salt Lake, the clerk will get your printout will be blank from the clerk at the end of the year. Because for some reason, it's all tied to the ward. And the bishop will do the same thing. He'll just ask you, are you a full tithe payer with zero information? Because it is, in that sense, done on, you know, honesty. I mean, that's the whole point. Honestly, as the saying, do I pay a tithe or not? That's an important thing to remember.
The question isn't it's not an accounting question. It's not, did you pay, you know, exactly 10% and let's make sure this is right. It's given to you and asking you if you're a full tithe payer.
Well, and it's like so many other things in the church. I mean, yeah, if you've got issues you need to work with your bishop, you might get into more detail, but your bishop just asks you things like, are you a full tithe payer? Do you keep the law of chastity? Are you honest? He doesn't go through those definitions and itemize what all of these things are. He's trusting that you have a working knowledge of what you should be doing. And if there is discussion to have, then have that discussion, you know. But that's something I really like about the gospel, that we're taught correct stuff. And when it comes to sitting with a judge in Israel, the judge in Israel simply asks us yes or no questions, whether we do or do not these things. And it's up to us to sort of decipher what that means to us. And but I think that's in a good way in that sense, because it keeps the bishop from it prevents, you know, difficult situations, tithing or other, where the bishop was asking nosy questions or stuff that he shouldn't be. I think Al, you've been a clerk before, I think, right? I know I've been one.
Executive secretary.
That's what you were in Hawaii, right? That was when you were the executive secretary. Okay.
I never looked at tithing.
I've been a clerk and I counted tithing every single day, and the one thing I've loved seeing during my experience with this is how seriously everyone I've run into takes it. Because, these are sacred funds, for one, and you're handling delicate personal information about people. I mean, I went through tithing slips, and I was effectively able, you know, could deduce what kids might, we're all college students, but, like, you know, what people's income was, right? And that's a serious thing. There's a lot of care that needs to go into that. And I was always impressed with how professional and serious everyone was about it, and not joking about it even a little bit. And some of this post in Rational Faiths, it seems like the issue here is that the author has caught jokes about it, because we're imperfect, we do dumb things, and you might
and the problem with a lot of that is you have like bishops that think that you know, maybe they've got a good chummy relationship with you, because maybe they do, but then some people are super sensitive about money, right? And all of a sudden he mentions money somewhere and you're like, bro, that ain't cool.
You're like, why are you thinking about this? Why are you referencing this? And I've known people. I mean, I've known some people actually who used to pay, who paid their tithing in their ward, and then actually caught at some point, heard clerks sort of talking. I don't know if it was joking, but like sort of just like discussing the finances of people in the ward, like privately, but still just discussing it. And so from that moment on, they just said, nope, okay, we're paying to Salt Lake. I'm not going to deal with that. We're done with that. So now, everybody, while your record will still go to Salt Lake as far as what you pay, which is also great because I assume that would mean your record will follow you around in whatever ward you're in, and you'll get the full readout every year.
Which they already do that now.
But, sort of, though. But if you say if you move in like November, when you're in your new ward into tithing settlement, you will only see a printout of what you paid in that ward. Everything else just won't show up. It's very strange, and I'm hoping the online system will sort of unify that. And I'm saying people move all the time, but like when I was in college, every fall, you know, there was a stretch there where basically like I went back to school, finished that there, then I graduated. Went back to California for about a year and did one tithing settlement there. Went to Scotland for school, did tithing settlement there. Went back to California, had to do it again there. So,
yeah,
like,
Jeff, I'm saying we've made strides in like the last 2 years.
We have, so. But even so, they don't usually follow you around, is what I've seen. Even before I got married.
Try it now. Try it now. Go be adventurous.
Okay, I'll do tithing settlement right now.
Yeah, just move twice in this year and see if you can keep track.
Okay, there's a fair chance we will move at some point before the end of the year, and we will see what happens with my funds. But by then, I'll be paying online, so I can't
finally.
I can't prove this. There's no way.
There's no data to be had.
There's just this doesn't work. It's a false premise now. What can you
do?
quick little news here: the church donated a hefty sum of money. $100,000 to Children's Justice Centers. What is Children's Justice Centers? Al just said, what?
So wait, these are like...
Kids are teaching kids to be judges in Israel now?
We have fake kid judges now. Little lawyers and arguments about
my name is Judge. So,
I'm taking you to child justice.
That should be a syndicated show.
Dude, Judge Judy should still be the judge in Children's Justice.
Child Justice... but in all actuality, it's a good thing. So this is to the Utah Children's Justice Centers, and it's a program to help kids who are victims of abuse and things like that receive the treatment and the help that they need. So
I would love to see more donations in this vein, right? Like $100,000 is a sizable sum for a charity, lets them go and do meaningful stuff. I feel like if a good charity comes to you with a good proposition about how they would use that money, you know, have some sort of a threshold that you're like, yeah, well, we're looking actively to give like, you know, a 100 donations at $100,000 a piece this year, and you got to meet this criteria and like come find us. Like let's have 100 of these stories in a year. I think that would be good.
Al, does This Week in Mormons qualify as one of the charities?
No, we should send them. What'd you make us? An Indiegogo page?
No. GoFundMe. We are on GoFundMe.
A GoFundMe
page. To remind all of you, folks, GoFundMe.
Are we up to $70?
We have not even made $70,000, let alone $70.
We have neither made $70,000. okay. All right.
But building on that, if you want to donate stuff, I think there are a few places as worthwhile right now as Nepal. With everything going on there. And it's very easy to forget, right? It's barely been over a week since the devastating earthquake there. And the news cycle is sort of already slipping out of it as far as intense coverage. And we're already talking about the Mayweather-Pacquiao fight and things. And that's, you know, like that's what matters. But Dustin Homer, who co-hosts Sunday School Bonanza here and there, actually wrote a post on our website. Some of you have probably seen it, but if not, go and find it. He works in international development.
But if not...
He works, that's his job. He spends time in developing countries trying to help them get more developed. And so he has a lot of insight into this, and he had some suggestions on what we can do if you want to help out in Nepal, including where to donate. He suggests some vetted charities that are worthwhile. So I just thought I'd give a plug for that out there. If you want to be involved in Nepal, one of the best rules is do not go there and think you will be of good use. Just stay out of the way. Like, give your money to competent organizations.
Unless you're a firefighter or something that works for some organization, then go there.
If they're one who's qualified, yeah. Because even the church isn't sending people there. I'm sure we'll be sending aid in, but even the church has no humanitarian organized mission with people to go help out because it just gets in the way. It's what you don't want to do at this point. So
I feel like that's always true. Like, in my mind, if they just had my mighty arms there helping dig, I could move concrete buildings. So I should go there.
I think you sound like an Avenger.
Yeah, thank you. So kind of going along that there's another article on, I guess, the steak in Baltimore, or multiple steaks in Baltimore, yes, are joining together to fast and pray for peace in their city.
They already did.
My question is sort of like, yeah, what should we be doing? You know, if there's riots in your city, do we stay inside? Is there any obligation to go and, like, protest for peace? Is there any obligation to, you know, go and protect things? Or, like, do we just stay inside and fast? What is the model for this? Well, I'm sure the police would just assume we stay inside and nobody
well,
move.
Well, the big difference here is this fast, of course, comes after all of the unrest in Baltimore. So it's not like people are set the choice between fasting or going out and engaging in whatever's going on. The city had already calmed.
Well, no, there continues to be protests there, right?
There are some, like, protests, but it's basically over. But what they're really fasting for is healing, and that the right things may come about, that the city can rebuild, that things can calm down. And this was pretty cool. We actually, the offer was extended to us down here in D.C. So even though it was our state conference, we're having Fast Sunday next Sunday in our state because of our state conference. The state president invited us to keep this in our prayers as the saints in Baltimore and elsewhere fasted for their city. And it was kind of cool, even tangentially, to be a part of that and know that as a body of saints, we were all, you know, fasting for justice and peace and the right things. But as far as your thing, yeah,
well,
I don't know.
Weird. Well, it's weird in this year. There's been like four cities I can think of that have had legitimate, you know, turnouts for protesting and rioting and all that stuff.
It's coming to a head.
Going on. Well, and what role does a good Latter-day Saint have in any of that? Are they like? Are we supposed to go out and say, "Well, listen, guys, let's settle down here," or you know, do we have a sort of a responsibility to go and stand up for fairness to the police, or like what should we be known for anything?
Well, Al, what you just said right there was loaded. You said, do we need to stand up to fairness for the police? And that in and of itself is basically saying that the police being brought up on charges is therefore not fair. And that alone and right there is too much.
No, I said fairness, like fairness for the people.
Who? You mean like justice because of Freddie Gray? You mean like fairness to him?
No, I mean like
who deserves the fairness?
You know, like cops. Well, it goes both ways. Cops get beat up, and then cops are beating up people that shouldn't be beat up. So like is there any responsibility as Latter-day Saints to go and sort of represent, or maybe not? I mean, it's dangerous any way you cut it. So maybe the right solution is just a good Mormon just sits at home and fasts. But I don't think that's always been the case. And I'm just curious if there's some like response that we should be, sort of leaning towards or known for.
I don't know if there's like if there'd ever be an official line to say, hey, you know, if there's social unrest, we should all get out there as a body of saints and try to like be peacemakers or represent something, because that could always unravel. You know, you come out there to be a peacemaker, and all of a sudden you're in a brawl.
Pretty soon you're upside down in the wrong situation. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. So I could see that happening, and I don't think there would ever be any kind of a rule. I would think, if anything, when there's social unrest historically, it seems that the church has usually advised us to try to stay out of the way and be safe, at least for missionaries.
We are neither seen nor heard.
Yes. You will always know. You can always know a Milford man.
Oh, those are the Mormons. They're the ones that disappear when the going gets tough.
We're not there to help out. We just disappear. We're just gone.
I
think the Baltimore Fast was cool, and I saw some recaps of this past weekend. Like,
they said no food was consumed. More on this in 2 hours.
Well, yeah, but the testimony meetings they had were apparently, you know, most people's remarks focused on everything that had happened. That's because it's shocking. I mean, if that happens in your community, everything that's gone down, that's pretty shakes you up. And unrelated, did you happen to catch any of the strange Orioles game in an empty stadium? That was something else.
I did. Well, when you sent me a text, and I went and watched it. It was bizarre.
So weird. So weird to see that something like that happen. A great stadium. One of the best stadiums in baseball.
I feel like you're more affected by the Orioles playing to an empty stadium than anything else we've talked about today.
I feel like them playing. It was quite the metaphor, it seemed. The Orioles playing to an empty stadium. There's just a lot of symbolism in that, I suppose. So sure. It hits me. It hits
you
me
baseball
hard.
Fan.
Elder Deke Todd Christofferson spoke at a historic religious freedom event in Brazil. And so we're taking it international, folks. We are going on tour. I believe Elder Anderson was in Argentina a few weeks ago as well for a similar event. And that's all I have to say about it. He spoke at a symposium on religious freedom. Apparently Brazil has rather robust religious freedom protections. And
there's a picture there with him shaking hands with a sheikh. Yep. I feel like that's progress.
I think it's cool. I don't know. I mean, this is a show where we're candid, and these are our personal views, of course. But sometimes I struggle with this. I don't mind the religious freedom thing a ton, but when we're going international and harping, I feel like there's like so much more we could do with our resources than that. But I don't know.
Then religious freedom where people can continue to worship how they deem.
But I feel like that's not really under threat. It's just our thing that we're doing now. I don't feel like my ability to worship as Latter-day Saint is in any way threatened.
What are you talking about that's not under threat? That's under threat all over the place.
Yeah, but in what sense? I don't think Mormons in Brazil are being persecuted. Or I mean, this is, you know, are they? As far as, I don't believe so. Are Mormons in America being persecuted? No.
Mormons in Venezuela being persecuted? American. Are Mormons in Cuba free to worship as they deem fit?
I very much
believe... I don't believe that religious freedom is under attack anywhere.
I very much believe... Well, no, but we're not in Cuba telling them to allow for religious freedom, are we? We're going to... It's... I don't know. Point is, I want people to be able to worship and freely as they may, per Joseph Smith. That's very important. But... sometimes we exhaust so many resources, you know, beating this religious freedom drum of late. It just makes me like wonder what else we could be doing.
I'm pretty sure Christofferson is flying on points. You know, I don't think we exhausted any resources in going down there. He gets to hang out with a sheikh with a cool hat. Jeff, I call that a solid Thursday night.
Let's do it. It's a win-win-win. You win, he wins, and we all win for being winners
together. Yeah. Okay. Let's see. We've got a couple of those we'll do later. Old age and leadership. Let's talk about our President Monson. There's an article in the Trib this week on President Monson and sort of the status of, you know, the comment is that he's feeling the effects of his old age. We've talked about this for a while. How you know, just as you age, you're still a prophet. You still do your thing. And it may not be easy. I mean, it's sort of a, like, it's a labor of love. It's always interesting to me to look at other religions where sort of the luxury of stepping down as the Lord's anointed is there, right? I mean, we've had a pope step down. We've had, I know in the RLDS Church, Community of Christ Church, one of the major events that happened in the last 10 years was they had their prophet step down. It was just like, you know what, I'm 70. I don't want to do this for the rest of my life. I'm going to go fishing. And just sort of chucked out. I don't know that he's actually going fishing. I was just being facetious. But in our church...
We can neither confirm nor deny.
In our church, you are... I mean, you're in it. You're in it till death. To, you know, that being said, the process of being there until you die is actually very revealing for some of these guys, where normally they'd have a little bit more privacy and the luxury of getting old on their own terms. And so, mm-hmm. President Monson, I mean, just a trooper, but he's getting old. He's getting old.
Well, and building on this, we'll link to it. There was a Radio West segment last week. Radio West is a, you know, radio show out in Utah. And they actually had Richard Bushman, you know, the author of Rough Stone Rolling, and Greg Prince, who wrote David O. McKay and the Rise of Modern Mormonism. He had them on as guests to discuss this topic. And I thought it was actually a pretty fair-minded rundown of what was going on, especially because the two men in question are active members of the church. You know, they want to have constructive, humanizing discourse about these sorts of things. But they talked about age and health of leaders and some of the history we actually have with whether people should be emeritus or not. For example, the 70 did not have emeritus status, and this was a contentious issue for about 10 years. And it wasn't until the Kimball era that they decided at about the age 70, which is what's common, with a few exceptions that have happened, 70s would step down and be emeritus 70s from that point forward. But it wasn't always that way. And so that's why some people say, well, could a member of the 12 then be emeritus? Could President Monson step down like the Pope, which has been cited a lot in the past 2 years, because that was a very, very rare thing that Pope Benedict did, not seen for hundreds and hundreds of years. And I agree with you. I think President Monson is a trooper. And the thing to remember all the time is Elder Nelson's talk from October 2014, which was, it blows me away that nobody would have looked into that as a very, very, very obvious nod to the fact that the prophet might slow down, both physically, even mentally, but there's a reason why collectively the 15 brethren hold keys of officiating in the work of the gospel and in carrying out the work. Obviously, we might suffer some when you have a weaker person at the very, very top to not be, you know, the united leader, but by and large, you know, we have contingencies in place, folks.
With the emeritus status of the 70, you're saying those used to be called until they died as well?
I believe so, and they almost jealously guarded that right, as they saw it, to be a 70, to be a general authority until their passing. But it was decided that, you know, you can better serve this until you're about 70, and then we'll fill up the ranks some more with some younger guys. But obviously, until death is reserved for the prophet level and seer and revelator level of things.
And I recommend both of those things.
Yeah. And I recommend giving that thing a lesson, though. It was a pretty interesting about, you know, 50 minutes with Doug Fabrizio and other folks, and I enjoyed it quite a bit. So, other quick ones right here. The Montreal Temple has been under renovation for a while now. They closed it down. And it's going to be rededicated. There were a lot of questions about the craftsmanship here, because this was the first of the mini temples to go down for, I think they cited, like, structural problems. This wasn't to add square footage or anything, like what happened.
Craftsmanship, like they were sad that Canadians had to touch it.
Oh, even worse.
They're like, now we just get even craftsmanship worse. From Canada. So it's
can
like
you imagine going to school at McGill? I mean, what a waste of time. Am I right?
Ugh.
Not really. But the Montreal Temple will be rededicated November. Let's see. They're going to have a quick open house November 5th through the 14th. And then they'll rededicate it on Sunday, November 22nd. So it's good for Montreal, because they've had to go down to Toronto to go to the temple. So they'll have their temple back. And this will also raise the total number of temples on the year up to 7. We thought we'd only have 6. But here we go. Montreal is ready to go.
Also, Cedar City, they found a site for their temple, for the temple down there, and that groundbreaking happens August 8th.
So, oh, cool. I don't know.
Be ready
that.
On my birthday.
Oh, it's a big year this year, Al. I'm going to celebrate hard.
Every year. Every year it happens. It's going to be amazing.
Let's see. Other quick ones right here. I love this piece in LDS Magazine. All about the seal of Melchizedek and the San Diego Temple. San Diego Temple is very near and dear to me as a Californian. It's also the temple where I got married, and it's where my wife is from down there. So we love the San Diego Temple. But if you've ever been there, you might have noticed a recurring motif all over the grounds of this sort of eight-pointed star that basically looks like a square, and then a square at a 45-degree tilt plopped onto it, okay?
The star of Melchizedek?
Yeah, and it's actually apparently the star of Melchizedek. And if you've been there, you see this everywhere. It is all over the place on the temple grounds, in the fencing, in etched into the glass doors of the temple. It's all over the place, even in floor designs, even in chandeliers. You see it everywhere on these grounds. And yeah, it's actually, according to some people like Hubie Nibley, for example, the Star of Melchizedek. I love this story from back during the open house, a media tour on the temple, and someone asked Elder David B. Haight, like, what's up with this? And he said, it's just an architectural detail, because he didn't know anything about that. And it wasn't until years later when this kind of came across Hugh Nibley's desk, and he was like, oh, yeah, that's the seal of Melchizedek. You know, that guy. So,
He's a smart fella.
So it was a cool little, nice little article to read. I really appreciate it for some of the history and stuff we can learn there. So go give it a read, folks. We will backlink to them.
We also have missionaries returning to Liberia and Sierra Leone.
Why were they gone?
So
why were they gone?
They declare Ebola beaten. Good work.
Okay.
Good work. So then they'll put missionaries back in? Good for them.
Okay, I'm only going to do one more of the ones we have on the list. Do you want to do 8 famous Mormons, people who became Mormons?
Yeah, let's do that one. I like
quickly, Ricky Schroeder apparently got baptized. Ricky Schroeder was on shows like Silver Spoons. I don't know what his level of involvement in the church is. I just know that after his baptismal date, he was in a series of episodes of Scrubs in which his character engaged in non-marital sexual relations with Elliot. So I don't know what that means.
Sometimes you got to make the money, Jeff.
Likewise, Gladys Knight. Of course, we all know Gladys Knight. She's been very public about her conversion story.
These are eight famous people who became Mormons?
Allegedly.
Is that right?
Glenn Beck is a famous person who became a Mormon.
Well, I've heard of him.
He's a famous
man. Might as well put
man.
Danny Ainge.
I think Danny Ainge was already a Mormon, though.
I know. They're all Mormon.
He didn't become
Dale
a Mormon.
Dale Murphy.
This is all about converts, Al. People who join the church later on.
Jeff,
Thurl
aren't we
Bailey.
All converted in our heart? Keep going.
Bailey. Gordon
Thurl,
Jump.
Right, yeah,
I love Gordon Jump. Al doesn't know Gordon Jump. He was on
Never
TV
heard
shows.
Of him.
He was on the sitcom Soap. He was also the Maytag man.
Apparently, I need to watch more TV like Jeff. Why can't you be like your brother Jeff?
As a quick aside, he was also in the Temple film a long time ago. I don't know what his role was, but he was in that. I do not know
he
if Dean...
He was the Maytag man in that as well.
I do not know... Okay, apostate meter. I do not know who Dean Jagger was. So there we go.
First, that was the weirdest apostate meter I've ever heard.
Well, you can't see it because we're not webcamming because of your weak Hong Kongese internet. But I did my apostate meter thing.
Okay, and then some other person we don't know. Good, keep going.
Dean Jaeger, he was a human. Kelly Packard, I do
never
know
heard from, of him.
Oh, the
Still
Kelly
no
Packard
clue.
Was on California Dreams. She was even
was
on
she
Baywatch.
She in Jaws?
No, she was on. Baywatch.
I said she was in Jews. I meant Jaws. Was she in Jaws?
No, Baywatch. She was also in California Dreams, which is the best show. And you might remember her from last year when she was on Celebrity Wife Swap, and she made
don't remember.
She made the swapped family live LDS values. Lastly, of course, there's Arthur Kane, who was in the 70s rock group New York Dolls, later joined the church. He has since passed away. And there's
great
actually
film
a
on him.
There's actually a movie about him called, there's a documentary about him that's actually very, very interesting about his experience joining the church before he died. So worth watching.
There you go. There you go, people. Oh, also there's a Filipino family that had a fire in the Book of Mormon spared. They got a testimony of it and joined the church. It's a good story. We should.
All right.
Anyway, that's all for us this week, Jeff.
Okay, then.
Park I got to go. I got to go.
You've got things to do. But you know what you should all do, you listeners? Go to visit us at thisweekinmormons.com. Send us an email at contact@thisweekinmormons.com. Say hi to us. Maybe we'll read your email on the air. And we also encourage you to leave a review in iTunes.
Say hi. Say hi for sure via email. But also, you may like and comment on the Bookface, on the Instagram, on the Twitters. We love all... So don't be a stranger. You hear? Don't be a stranger.
You may not realize it, but we read comments. We read your emails. We see your messages, and we appreciate you taking the time to make us a part of your day. So thank you.
Absolutely. All right.
All right, pal.
Hey, Jeff.
Have a great time out there in being Cantonese. Enjoy it.
See you in America next week, buddy.
All right, pal. Everyone, thank you for listening to This Week in Mormons. We hope you have a wonderful week, and we thank you again for taking the time to be with us. We'll talk to you again.
What the test say? Prove. What the test say?
Slept all night, woke refreshed, breakfast gone, down the hatch, studied hard, homework done. Now's the time to ace this one. Focus in and take my time. Add, subtract, and multiply. But if a snack is what I need, reaching in my desk for G-E-E-E-Sits, G-E-E-E-Sits, G-E-E-E-Sits. Time to pass this test with E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-
pencils out. Get your number two pencils out. What the test say? Reading science math essay. Reading science math essay. Reading science math essay. What the test say? Dream, believe, achieve. Dream, believe, achieve. Dream, believe, achieve. What the test say? Ooh, 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 ooh. What does the test essay.